Hey, everybody, it's Sunny. Just letting you know you're listening on the iTunes feed. This week's episode that you're listening to right now, it's about The Gray Man on Netflix, which came out like a month ago, it feels like. There was an episode on Victoria's Secret, Angels and Demons, that you guys probably missed. We got a League of Super Pets episode that's up there now that'll never be on this feed just because we didn't do a bonus episode this week. And this week we're on the main at subbeacon.com at the Patreon. We're talking about Bullet Train. So if you want to hear about Bullet Train, go check it out at subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Sign up. It's little as a dollar a month. It helps keep Vic interested in doing the show. It helps keep me from having to put my children into the coal mines to pay for their you know, school and stuff. Or at least the other one's in public. It doesn't matter. Point is, go sign up at the Patreon, subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us.
What do you know about the Sierra program?
Reckless mystery men you guys send in when you can't officially send anyone else.
The Gray Man.
Lloyd. They got an urgent locate and destroy.
That could be fun. The man's got some street cred.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com, you'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Gentlemen, how are we? Sonny Bunch, happy birthday. Belated
Thank
birthday.
You. Thank
A
you.
Big one, wasn't it?
40 years old.
Wow.
40. Turned 40.
And
this is 40.
That's how I feel.
How did you celebrate?
It was nice. Beth and I went to a nice Japanese restaurant here in Dallas.
Benihana.
Tae-on. No, not Benihana. It was good because there were actual Japanese people in there.
Well, that's always
eating.
That's always
eating.
A good sign.
That's always. I
do that with many a restaurant.
Yeah,
it's a good gauge. Yeah. Also, you want the people who work at the restaurant to be of the same ethnicity.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried because the guy who was waiting on me was like, "Yeah, I just started 3 weeks ago. You know, this is a little bit nicer than Outback where I was." But he was actually very
portable though.
He was very good, and mm-hmm. he was being watched very closely by the boss who looked much like the sushi chef from Kill Bill. Sonny Chiba, I think.
Sonny Chiba, who that was. Yeah, of course.
Was like kind of watching in the background, like making sure everything was okay. But he was a. It was really, good.
I assume you were there with the whole family.
No. Just me and Beth. Just two.
It's his birthday, Vic. Going to a restaurant with your whole family is something you do when you want to torture yourself.
That's not when you want to
celebrate.
It is. It was connected to my second question, which was this like a hibachi performance thing or no? You just didn't.
No. It's not like Benny. It's not like Benihana.
Because I was going to say, because that's where the kids would love it. It's a big show.
Like
the volcano.
You know. No. It's like a nice Japanese place where they have like the good omakase menu.
Wow.
And, you know, homemade soba noodles.
Okay. Greater.
The omakase menu is a 7-course thing, right? And they have, you know, the actual Japanese wagyu beef.
Yes. Like A4, A5, whatever the grading is.
Well, yeah. It was like A12 or something. It was like some crazy.
Did you indulge yourself?
It was not a cheap meal, but this was like part of the, it wasn't like a, you know, upcharge or anything, right?
Yes.
So, but it was very funny because the waiter brought out a certificate of authenticity, like from the prefecture of Japan. It was like, here, you'll see that that shows you.
Oh, come on. I've never seen that.
This is where it's from.
To you, the way the Japanese businessmen do their business cards with a ceremony. meal.
Two hands like a business card.
It was not far off of that. But it was. I looked at it appreciatively. I was like, oh, this is good to know. Mm-hmm. This is thank you.
The cow died happy listening to gentle music while being massaged,
exactly,
drinking beer.
Exactly.
And then they just
Anyway, it was very, very nice. Great meal, great ambiance. Vic, if you ever come out to Dallas, I will take you there. We will have
very exciting. Greater sign, lesser sign than Sushi Nakazawa.
It's right.
Apples
up there.
And oranges.
It's slightly different because Sushi Nakazawa is like a more traditional sashimi and sushi place, right? Like,
yes, strictly.
The sushi at Sushi Nakazawa was definitely, I think, better than the sashimi I had here. Though the sashimi I had here was great. I mean, but the overall experience was. It's very similar. A very similar sort of.
Wow.
Again,
so like really fancy.
Throw yourself in the hands of the chef. He puts exciting. It together for you. And again, the homemade soba noodle like finisher course was amazing.
Ooh.
Very, very good. So
I think you're turning Japanese.
If you guys ever come out here, we'll go there.
That's very exciting. Do you remember the sushi at Sushi Nakazawa? I believe it was still alive.
It was.
Cut it right, like Hannibal Lecter style, like with Ray Liotta. They just took it right out.
Well, yeah. This place is very similar. This place is very similar. They go through a whole spiel like, oh, we got it. This was out of the ocean 22 hours ago off the coast of Japan.
What?
It's from air express it overnight it and they get it there and
they air express
it. It's very, very good.
They took it from a helicopter off of a cargo ship. And then shortly after the helicopter left, the cargo ship capsized because of a giant lizard.
Yes, exactly. It has the breath of Godzilla on it.
On it.
I watched that today.
Which one?
Godzilla vs. Kong.
Oh, okay.
Godzilla vs. Kong. Okay. G-Money wanted to watch it.
And? Yeah. How is it on a repeat viewing? That's what I want to know.
It's, it's terrible until Godzilla and Kong start fighting in Hong Kong. At which point, the final 20 minutes are so amazing that everything else is forgiven.
Yeah. Which is because they travel around the globe. They're like literally globe trotting, hopping.
Well, they go like
the
through the globe. Don't they take that tunnel through the?
Well, so King Kong goes through the earth. Godzilla, for his point, merely from Hong Kong uses his nuclear laser breath to blow a hole that goes all the way to the center of the earth. So Godzilla is standing in Hong Kong.
And the planet
it's a hollow earth.
But his laser goes all the way to the hollow earth.
Right.
And then Godzilla looks down into it and sees King Kong looking up at him.
Oh, come on.
But on the other hand, King Kong does a Superman punch, UFC style.
And yes, he does.
I don't know.
Yeah, like, no, that, which makes it worth it. Do you think it's everything I hoped it could be. How often do you think when people say, oh, I was recently watching Godzilla, do they actually refer to the Matthew Broderick one?
That's a good question.
That used to be on TBS, wasn't it?
Oh, it used to be on
the
HBO
girl
all the time.
In that movie was terrible.
Maria Patillo?
Oh, that's exactly who I was going to say Maria Bello, but that's entirely different.
Patillo.
Yes, she was horrible. Horrible.
Boy, well, are we done with that with that Japanese restaurant segment? Because I felt like that was just a minefield that we successfully got through.
Arasumashe. Were you greeted? Arasumashe. Arasumashe.
Because no, they were say, no, yeah. not
my
not,
stockings,
not like that.
Miso Bunch.
No, lip them.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Lost in translation
there.
It was great. Highly recommended if you are in the area. It's not cheap, but it's not crazy expensive either. It's $125 a person for the 7-course menu. I figure for a 40th birthday, that's a totally reasonable price
for a meal.
Did you get the price of a Sunday brunch in most places in DC?
But that's the thing is that like $125, not crazy expensive. No, I mean, it's not a super fancy dinner.
Did they give you any wild sushi? Sea urchin?
Did you get sea urchin? No, it was the sashimi plate. So the sashimi plate is one of the 7 courses, and it was like. Honestly, it was like the least impressive part of the whole thing.
Yeah, for 100.
It was fine. It was very, very good. Don't get me wrong. It was very good, but it was just like kind of straightforward. Like, here's some fatty tuna. Here's some salmon. Here's, okay. You know.
Well, I'm sure it was very good. I just hope for 125, the sushi, the nigiri, or the, I should say, the roll that they give you is not a California roll.
It was actually a California roll. Just
no,
it came
it
in
wasn't.
A little plastic, plastic box.
Yes.
With a little
with a fake green.
With it had some green dots, and it had a little packet of soy sauce.
You just yeah, so that's good. It, yeah, yeah.
Did this have a conveyor belt, this place?
Where you yes.
Picked it off?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That you sit around. It's a sushi bar, but it's actually 200. A conveyor belt. It's amazing.
If it was 500, I could probably get my $500 worth. I'm just going to say that. Well, happy birthday, JVL.
Thank you.
How are you, and how is the bathroom situation? I don't know how to put this because I forgot the words. I saw a photo of
septic.
A sewage septic. That's the word. It was a septic tank truck, and you were standing. Looked like you were heading behind it. And the other thing is, if you look on the ground, you know, sometimes the septic trucks, they leave a trail. Mm. And I was just hoping whatever's happening, you're not walking behind it. What happened?
We pumped the septic tank. For the first time.
Oh, okay. So this is a normal thing you were supposed to do.
It's a thing you're going to have to do like every 6 months, right? Every year?
So
every month to that. Me.
So I just called up the company that used to service this house. I said, I don't know when the last time this thing was pumped was. And they said, it looks like you're probably
Chrissy Multisanti said, hey, we'll get a guy out there with a truck tomorrow. Hey.
Look, I mean, you laugh. But the name of this company is the most Italian thing ever, and
probably shouldn't mention the name. But
if the
Guido Sarducci's,
if the septic business is on the level, I would be shocked.
Well, I mean, you know,
I assume it's like dry cleaning and the trash business and the cigarette machines. Like it's all connected.
Well, you know, again, and it works out really perfectly for certain people because you have a trucking route. All sorts of things you can do. Yes.
So when we did the home inspection, the inspector was very, very adamant that when your septic system gets pumped, you got to be out there and watch it. Because if you don't, they can screw you. They can say that they've pumped 1,000 gallons, but not actually do it. And that's why if you don't watch them, they'll screw you. And so I went out there, and the nice gentleman from
shot the shit with him, so to speak.
Connellini's was like, "Yeah, you never done septic before?" I said, "No, I haven't." And he's like, "Yeah, come on over. Let me show you what it's all about."
Oh, wow!
And he's like, he's got the pole, he's stirring it up. He's like, "Look in there, right?"
You no, he didn't say that. Oh, he didn't say that.
Oh yeah, we're talking, and you know, we're just talking while we. Stirred all up and watch giant hose.
You were literally stirring the shitstorm.
Can I ask? So I don't understand what this looks like. Is the septic tank like under your house? Is it next to your house? Like where is
underground.
It located?
It is
right. No. I understand that it's underground.
Somebody wants
but
to
like,
know how do they tap into it?
Yeah, off like how do? Is there like
it's like a manhole?
Is there like? Is there like a? Oh, okay.
No, it's literally like a manhole cover. Exactly like it. It. In fact, is a manhole cover. That's what it is. And
is this a front yard or side
it's
backyard?
Off to the side. We got a lot. We got acreage.
Oh, okay.
We're not lacking for yard.
Yeah.
And he's you know we're I think he's this gentleman was lovely and I really appreciate it. As he said to me, he said, "Look, you take care of it, and it'll take care of you." And I just thought, oh
did
my
he
God.
Say that? That's great.
I want to die. Just take
you know,
me now, Jesus.
These people are also belong to that category of workers who definitely deserve whatever it is they earn or more because it is something that many of us just would not want to do.
Yes. So it's all happening and it's being sucked away. And again, he was great. Lovely guy. Great. I was, look, happy to have spent 3 hours with him while he pumped shit out of my yard. Yes.
Does he have to like aim the hose in there, or does he just do you just like plop it down and
well,
it,
the
like,
hose is,
or
like,
does he like does he have to like a
10
like
inch,
a,
an 8-inch diameter hose maybe? Uh-huh. It's a big old hose.
Yeah,
and he drops it down. You gotta, you know, we have, there sometimes there are problems if people let fatty stuff get in, because we have two different systems. We have a gray water system and a black water system. And, you know, you get kids flushing matchbox cars down the toilet. That'll screw things up at the distribution box, obviously. You got to carefully the distribution box, Victorino. Mm-hmm. And the problem you get in the gray water tanks is if people go putting, like, congealed oils and fats down the drain, then that stuff over time will turn into hard as rocks, right? And it'll assume the pipes, and you got to go. Anyway, he's like, again, great. I am so happy that I learned all this. And then I was asking him, so what do I, you know, how often are we supposed to do this? And he's like, yeah, you got six people. He said, I'd say every 2 years. And I was like, 2 years? Can we do it every month?
Oh, I was going to say.
Can we just get this taken care of every month?
You want it to be, you don't want to be like, we'll fill it to the brim.
I don't want to. Anyway, and then, you know, the... the pumping truck, which is pumping everything, you know, like it's not perfect. Like it's not, you know, not everything is solid. So it's sucking in some air, and whatever, however the system is in the giant tank on this enormous diesel truck, it has some sort of mechanism in which it is venting excess gas out with, I'm sorry, aerosolized particles. And by the time this was over,
it's everywhere.
And I realized this, it's like, I need a Silkwood shower.
I was going to say, even was there like a mist? Were you surrounded in a mist? Like, oh, it's awfully foggy. Why is this like this brown fog?
In my pores, in my hair. And it's never, and I have to stay out there, because if I don't stay out there, you know, one of these guys, one of these fine gentlemen will screw me, so says the home inspector. It was just vaguely horrifying, but I made it through, and look at me. I'm all grossed up now.
Yes.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Do they charge per, like, the metric ton of filth extracted from your home, or is it, like, just a, is it a
service
flat rate?
Charge.
Like,
I think it's a service.
You show up here, it's like $200 to pump your house.
So interesting you ask that, Sonny. They charge a flat rate for the first 1,000 gallons, and then a per 100-gallon rate after that.
Yeah.
Now, you may be asking yourself, how do they calculate this?
Mm.
The answer seems to be the eyeball method.
No. They must have some sort of a gauge inside to measure.
Must they? Must they?
Yeah.
Because this fine gentleman said, I think it's about 1,500 gallons.
There's all sorts of gauges.
He just sort of eyeballed it, and I didn't see any gauges. Mm. And he's just like, it's about 1,500. And he just wrote it up, and I just, here. Yes. Thank you.
It was a guesstimate. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Okay. I appreciate it for making it go away. And I get inside, and Flash says to me, so it's all cleaned out, right? I said, yeah, it's all cleaned out. And he goes, no, it's not, dude. Boom! I just dropped the first deuce in the clean tank. I was just like, oh my God. You ridiculous bro. Get away from me. He was very proud of himself.
Did you burn the clothes that you were wearing?
I should have.
Actually, that tank top JVL has on now was once white. See, it's now gray. I imagine the truck that guy drives has to be the safest truck on the road, because nobody wants to run into you.
Well, you know, right, I mean, like between the well water and the septic system, and I'm thinking about getting solar panels on my roof. You know, I'm gonna be just fine when the shit goes down.
We'll be
self-sufficient.
So to speak.
We're gonna start raising chickens.
Be fine until somebody shows up with an AR-15 and takes that place over. You gotta go if you're gonna go full. You know. Mountain man, you got to get an armory too.
No, I'm just going
to get a bullet reloader. And
I'm just going to pay Sergio and Salvador protection money. And then they'll take care of any.
That's how you wind up with Sergio and Salvador owning your home over your corpse.
That's right. You need to
that's
get
fine
if
with
you,
me.
If you
I'm
need
sure
some
that,
home defense,
sure, look,
let me know. I can
I'd
hook
take
you
care
up.
Of them. They'll take care of me.
Okay.
All right. Victorino, how are you, buddy? Look, these are all your people, Vic. I assume that you'd be totally
I
into
love
this.
And
like,
I think
yeah,
it's great.
They're great.
I'm all for it. Construction, waste management. It's a living. I'm heading through that area tomorrow as we're heading up to Connecticut.
Up to Connecticut. Are you taking the tap?
That's the question, isn't it?
The tap and Z?
Because as you get the close, tap,
you'll be driving literally a mile away from my house. You might as well just stop over and get a cup of coffee. Stop over.
Wow, that is way up there.
Because you'll be going on 287.
Yeah, briefly. Because usually what happens is you run the turnpike, and then if you decide to take the tap, then you got to go up the Garden State until it.
You'll hits. Garden State to 287.
Yeah, and then you're into the next thing you know, it's the New York Thruway.
Just stop and look. It's a great place for you to take a break. I'll make you an espresso. You can go to the bathroom. You can defile my very clean septic system.
My goal, I might have to use it. If I have to use it, I'm like, that's it. We're pulling in. My goal is to get through to Connecticut because, like, New York is bad, but Connecticut is worse. And because it's like a two, you know, Interstate 95 becomes basically like two lanes.
Yeah.
Hmm? It's two lanes.
Connecticut has no roads.
They don't. And it's just 95 or the Merritt, and that's it. Going all the way to Rhode Island and then up to Boston. And everybody's on that road. The worst part is when you get to Connecticut, they usually have signs warning you that there's traffic delays and traffic congestion. And you know what it'll say? From exits 1 to 9, traffic congestion. You get to 9 and then it'll say traffic delays 11 to 20. And then you get to 20 and it'll be like 22 to 40. And then it's just like every step of the way. Like, don't tease me. But
what about the Major Deegan? Can you do the Major Deegan?
Oh, you gotta hold on. That's white knuckle. That's white knuckle territory. I was just reading, in Bonfire of the Vanities. All those places are mentioned. Gun Hill Road. Mm-hmm. It's all there. It's all through there.
Yeah, you like this?
Jerome Ave.
I love when we do New England highway talk.
Right.
It's almost as good as Jersey rest stop talk.
That's right. Get me to, but I want to, you know, you see it. You got to stay on the left side because then it'll say to New England and then off you go. Heading towards in the direction of New Haven. But man, oh man, you got to go through Co-op City. Again, that is fine, and it's nothing compared to the traffic in Connecticut. So that's it. But I'm looking forward to getting over there. And then...
Because you miss your kids so much.
I miss my
kids. You just can't wait to get them back in the house.
Yeah.
Because the house feels so empty without them. And you're like, what am I even doing?
What did you eat this week?
What did I eat this week? I ate a lot. I went out. I ate at various restaurants. Went out. I was at a French restaurant last night. I just had some leftovers today. I was supposed to go out, but that dinner got canceled.
How many trips to the Palm?
We cooked a little bit at home.
How many trips to the Palm?
None. It was supposed to be one last week with our friend Mary Catherine, but she has hand, foot, mouth from the baby.
We sent her cookies from one of the best cookie bakeries I've ever seen around here as a when you get over hand, foot, mouth. You guys must have done that at some point with the kids.
Never had.
We all did. Ugh,
never had. Awful. Knock on wood. Oh my gosh, no. So but we're gonna go up there for Connecticut and then we're gonna go down to Jersey. I'm looking forward to the shore. I'm looking forward to getting my pizza and my frozen custard. And by the way, you know what I was talking to her about with Mary Catherine? Ice cream sandwiches, but the kinds that are in the shape of discs. Do you know what we call them?
Is this dangerous too?
It is because it's Jersey and you're not sure if it's like, is it going to be something really? Not to fear.
Careful.
What I'm looking forward to eating is the flying saucers. Speaking of which, over the weekend, Nope. Scared its way to the top of the box office with $44.4 million, followed by Thor Love and Thunder with $22.6 million, and in third place, Minions The Rise of Gru with $18 million. Box office thoughts. JVL, I don't think neither of us saw Nope.
Could not pay me enough. Nope.
Okay. Sonny, you saw Nope. Is better than worse than Get Out. Us, I think everyone loves Get Out. You feel the other way. I don't know. What do you have to say?
I have slightly contrarian views on this, shocker. I prefer Us to Get Out because Get Out is like a Get Out is actually a perfect screenplay. It's like perfectly structured. It like nails the metaphor it's going for. It's like sneakily deep in certain ways. It does interesting things with the topic, but it is like a clockwork, like from beat to beat, from point to point. Everything makes logical sense. It there's no plot holes. You can't really pick it apart and be like, oh, but what about this? Mm-hmm. Like it all works so long as you buy the basic premise of what is going on in that movie. Us, on the other hand, is a mild mess in terms of the logic of the metaphor at the heart of it. It doesn't actually really make any sense. Yeah, the central premise of Us is that essentially that there is a doppelganger for every American, and they live underground like chuds, and they come up in a rebellion, an uprising. But it's a class metaphor. It's a class metaphor as opposed to a race metaphor, which I like, which I actually like more. I mean, I think it's more interesting, frankly. But that's because I'm a racist white person. But I actually prefer the weird nightmare logic of Us. I find it much more terrifying than Get Out with its clockwork precision. I like the like weird idea of like just this subterranean, group of people hanging out down there, like being abused for no good reason, and then they come up and they
just have to not ask yourself questions like,
you gotta shut your brain off.
Where did they get food, clothing?
Yeah, it does not make a lick of logical sense, but it has this like kind of interesting nightmare logic to it, which is like, well, what if, you know, like what if there was like a dark version of you? What if there was abused, terrible version of you somewhere that wants to take revenge.
You mean there's a happy version of you somewhere?
Yeah, where's did we lock the happy JVL up?
JVL's actually in the underground,
the catacombs.
Right, that's why.
So I prefer Us to Get Out, but I am happy to exceed that.
And
Nope is interesting. I kind of like it. I like it because it's doing a lot of different interesting things. And it has a lot of great performances in it. I love Daniel Kaluuya in it. He's fantastic. Steven Yeun, he's great. Lots of really good performances. It's kind of a mess. It is all over the place. It is doing too many things at once. But the like basic overall idea is the addiction we all have to filmed trauma and spectacle. Which is kind of interesting.
You pay a price for that.
There's actually stuff we could talk about on the show, but JVL, I actually, it's not really that scary. It's more like, it's a bit like Close Encounters by way of Jaws.
All right. Which I could probably live with that.
You could, I there are a couple of scary
children spider crawling at me.
Yeah, but there is one sequence like that. There is one sequence like that, but
do you agree with J-Pod that he found the most compelling thing to be something completely unrelated, which was the chimpanzee story?
So this is one of the problems with the movie, and from in my point of view, is that that actually is by far the most compelling thing in the movie.
Yeah.
And he is not the main character. Steven Yeun's character is not the
main
character.
Right. In case JVL doesn't know what we're talking about.
No, I do. Right. He runs the rodeo and
backstory. His backstory is
child performer, saw the chimpanzee. I'm with you.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, that guy has the most interesting arc in the film, but he is not the main character. And that's I think the big structural problem with this movie is that like it just has the wrong main characters, that's a mild problem. Yeah. But I enjoyed it. I think it's interesting. Again, it's interesting.
So you think the Asian guy should be the lead and not the black man?
Okay. You said it.
I'm all for that. We don't have. How often does that happen? Okay.
Yeah, I know. Come on.
With the exception of Shang-Chi and everything.
So I don't know. It's interesting. The box office on this is not actually great. I mean, look, $44 million or whatever for a original R-rated film is a good open, no matter what. But it's I think about $30 million less than Us was.
Right.
It's got a B cinema score, which is is not terrible for a movie that was marketed as a horror movie and is really closer to a sci-fi Western horror hybrid. So, you know, we'll see how it does in its second weekend. I'd be kind of curious. I would be surprised if it held super well, because it has it's a weird movie. And I think audiences will be vaguely annoyed with it, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, the cinema score is not terrible.
What was the drop this week for Thor Love and Thunder?
Thor Love and Thunder dropped another 50% or so in its third weekend. So not terrible, but it's not holding great. I mean, the two best movies, again, Top Gun Maverick and Elvis, both held like 16. They had 16% drops or something. I mean, like those two movies are doing really, really well. Just, I mean, you know, Top Gun Maverick is the first film aside from Titanic or Avatar to make more than $10 million in its first 9 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's the third movie ever to do that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's good for it. It's doing really well.
Great.
People love it. So.
So this week we're actually doing a Netflix movie by the Russo brothers called The Gray Man, starring Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
The Gray Man. The Gray Man, directed by Joe and Anthony Russo, who are the two highest grossing directors of all time, not named Steven Spielberg, should be noted. They made, you know, some $11 billion on the making the Avengers and Captain America movies.
Did they do both? Did they do all the Avengers? Like right?
No, they did the third, and they did Endgame and Infinity War. Remember, Joss Whedon did
The big ones.
The first two.
Yeah,
Joss Whedon, who has been airbrushed out of history. Nobody remembers Joss Whedon anymore. So anyway, Russo brothers, highest grossing box office directors of all time, not named Steven Spielberg, direct Ryan Gosling as a CIA black ops agent.
As Jason Bourne.
Basically as Jason Bourne.
I wrote Bourne Identity on here, by the way.
Basically as Jason Bourne, who in the midst of trying to get some intel off of a guy, learns that the CIA is full
off of Clive Owen.
And they're trying to kill
everybody.
You guys want to just do it?
Sorry, because
that would be easier than
please
being interrupted. Dude, every time.
I didn't realize we were doing it.
I try to talk. Ryan, the movie's not very good. It's super generic. The performances veer between like kind of nondescript with Ryan Gosling and like weirdly terrible with Chris Evans and his dumb mustache. Anna de Armas plays a CIA helper who is made to wear the most unfortunate costumes ever. Just total waste of Anna de Armas. Mm-hmm. Billy Bob Thornton actually gives my favorite performance in the movie as like the CIA guy who's being, you know, tortured to the scene where he's being tortured and he's got
that
look
was
on his
shocking
face like, yeah, give me more. That was actually pretty entertaining. The movie itself. Look, it's a $200 million Netflix movie, which means it's actually really more like a $100 million studio movie, because $100 million of that is going to pay for Chris Evans and Ryan Gosling and Anna de Armas and Billy Bob Thornton and the Russo brothers. I mean, between those six names, you're probably looking at $80 to $90 million worth of
salary.
You know, salary, because they all get paid up front. They all get their number up front. And you know, that's not nothing. So it's really more like $100 million movie. If you think of it that way, it looks pretty good. Looks pretty good. There are three things I want to discuss. The first is the very terrible airplane jump sequence. We will go into this more later. I'm sure JBL has thoughts. He was texting me how terrible it is. But it's a really bad action sequence. It's like the worst possible way you could do that action sequence. The second thing is that the shootout in Prague actually looks pretty good. I actually liked how that looked. It looked real. They were like clearly shooting things. They were blowing stuff up.
I got the sense that was actually on location.
It was on location in Prague. Like, it felt like a real place that they were doing mayhem in, which is like, that's my favorite moment of the movie, when the like good CIA agent is like, what are you doing? And Chris Evans and his mustache are like, more, more guys, blow it. So I kind of like that. The third thing that is going on in this movie that is interesting is the way the Russos use drones.
Yeah.
Establishing shots where they swoop down, around, and up high.
Oh.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's not just that they are they're doing a different thing with establishing shots, right? Like, they are getting both, like, super intimate with the actors and also, like, zooming out, you know, but not zooming because it's part of the drone. So it's just like you get to see a ton of space and it's super intimate all at the same time. The problem is nobody quite knows how to make all of this footage work with regular footage. Like, Michael Bay doesn't know either. I can't remember if we talked about this.
Mm.
Did we do Ambulance? I don't even remember.
No, we did not do Ambulance.
But Michael Bay does a lot of drone work in Ambulance. And that movie has some, like, really interesting drone shots. Yeah. Like, there's this one really cool shot where he has a drone, like, following a guy through a space that's about as wide as my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps the action intimate and up close while also allowing the camera to instantly, like, pull back and zoom out and you can see everything. Nobody quite understands how to meld all of this with regular footage, and it looks weird and kind of cut together like it's in a blender. Now, in a Michael Bay movie, that doesn't really matter. Here, it matters more because it messes with the sense of space and action. I mean, overall, I actually didn't hate this movie. I liked it more than Red Notice. I'll give it that much.
Why better did movie that, than Red that Notice. Movie came to my mind as well, even though when I started refreshing my memory about Red Notice, which was a terrible movie, I mean, in my mind, I think the only thing they had in common is that they were both on. Well, that was another Netflix movie, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it was a different plot because they were going, they were looking for something, I guess. But I still had,
doesn't matter.
For some
reason,
doesn't matter. In my mind, I associated it slightly with this movie as well.
Well, Red Notice is like a super generic Indiana Jones type movie. This is a super generic spy thriller in the Bourne identity mold, as you guys were saying. So, I mean, I actually don't hate this movie. I hate a couple sequences in it. I really like a couple other sequences in it. It's just like a thing that you watch while you're folding socks at 9 at night on Wednesday.
That is not a strong endorsement.
I'd rather listen to an audiobook.
Yeah, the kind of movie where you could talk for a couple minutes, come back, and you really didn't miss anything.
Do you know what else we didn't talk about with Michael Bay? And I can't believe that we left this on the cutting room floor last week.
JVL.
The Michael Bay Victoria's Secret commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Which
in the
Victoria's Secret thing they show us, I had forgotten about it. And Victoria's Secret gets Michael Bay to direct a commercial for lingerie, uh-huh. and he manages to have helicopters and explosions in it. I mean,
this is something to be celebrated. There's a great scene in that commercial where a Victoria's Secret model opens these French doors, these sliding doors open, and it's a great scene.
Yeah.
It's a great scene. Yeah, it just is. Go back and find. You'll know what I'm talking about. JV, I get the sense JVL and I did not like this movie as much as you did, Sonny. JVL, what are your thoughts on this very sort of, I thought it to be very derivative and I had other issues with it, but go ahead.
This is the following that struck me, and maybe Sonny's not old enough to remember this. Vic, do you remember going into Blockbuster?
Yes,
you're a junior in high school or a senior in high school, and you go into Blockbuster
and
to
you find
out
there's no
back
room with
night.
The beaded curtains. You find out there's no beaded curtains. It's the worst.
And you're going through the new releases wall, and there is the movie that the Blockbuster movie from 7 months ago.
I know, like, what you're going to say.
The big movie from 7 months ago that's a new release. And then there is also a movie that was not, like, quite a big deal in 7, but they've, you know, and they've got 50 copies of the big movie, like Con Air.
Uh-huh,
and then they have, like, 15 copies of Runaway Bride, right?
Yeah.
And then they've got, like, 4 or 5 copies of this other movie with a bunch of movie stars in it that you've never heard of. And you think to yourself, wait a minute, what did I miss this? Did it just come through theaters so fast that I missed it? And you look at it and you're like, oh, it went direct to video, right? It's always like, it's like Christian Slater was in it, right? Somebody who's Christian Slater and Sylvester Stallone, like people they're movie stars, you know their names. They're not quite all the way up at the level of Julia Roberts
to actually rent it out of curiosity.
And so you rent, right? Every once in a while you do, right? Because you forget. Mm-hmm. And you bring it home and you watch and you're like, oh, this is just a piece of shit.
This is why it went direct to video.
This is why it went direct to video. And that is why movies go to Netflix. Why is The Gray Man on Netflix instead of released into theaters?
Yeah.
Because this is...
the quality control on Netflix productions is so low that they get projects where everything from the script level to the conception of it simply isn't good enough to be released in theaters. Mm-hmm. And that's what Red Notice was. That's what this is. That's what all of the Netflix feature films are. Mm-hmm. And this thing is, it's very bad. And we could talk, it's bad in ways which are astonishing to me. So there is a sequence in which Ryan Gosling is in a plane and he gets into a fight in a plane. The plane blows up around him and he's falling through. The point is, this is what the Halo sequence, the Halo jump sequence from Mission Impossible Fallout would look like if it was directed by like a film student. And
ouch.
And that's okay. But what I don't understand is the Russos choosing to include this in the movie when it is so clearly inferior to some. This would be like 2 years after Goodfellas came out, deciding, you know what, I'm going to do my movie. I've got this movie here. I think we have in the script a single take shot where we go through a club, all in one take and meet a bunch of different characters. And, we'll try it too. Yeah. And maybe it'll be like the Copacabana scene, or maybe it won't.
Yeah.
You know?
It's funny you mentioned the airplane scene, and Sunny did as well. I watched this movie with Kate, and she said that for her, she thought was, that was a scene that stood out to her as being particularly bad.
Well, but also somebody has just done the perfect version of this scene. Yeah. Like, don't do that again. Come up with some other reason.
I mean, this sort of thing has been done in many movies over the last, few decades. But I was actually reminded, because I had recently seen, as I mentioned on this show, Eraser. And even that movie has an interesting airplane sequence because, of course, it's, Arnold Schwarzenegger holding on to and there's all the stuff that's going into the engine, the intake, and so it's to slow it down, and then of course he gets out. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's interesting, it's original, and you can make you can visually see what's going on. This one, it was so crazy.
In this movie, I mean, tonally it's all over the map, right? Yeah. You've got Ryan, what's his name? Ryan Gosling, who is doing a very straight Jason Bourne thing. And then you've got Ana de Armas, who's kind of doing Salt. Yeah. She's doing this very serious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Chris Evans, who is doing Jim Carrey's Riddler from Batman Forever.
Yeah.
You know, like that. He is playing a quirky, funny villain, not like a real villain. And it's just wrong. The kid they cast, like the girl who...
From Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Julia Butters.
She's not very good in this. She is not very good
in
this.
Did you...
Who was she in? Fine. Who was she in Once Upon a Time
She was opposite Leonardo DiCaprio in the Western sequence. Oh, well, she's the
one who whispers, that was the best acting I've ever seen.
Yeah, okay, she basically is almost like the same character, I thought.
Her screen chemistry with Ryan Gosling here does not work at all. Like, they just seem supremely uninterested in each other. And Ryan Gosling's sort of like quiet, disinterested guy thing. Mm-hmm. Really only works if there's a whole lot else going on in the film, like around him.
Right.
Because then, he's adding by subtracting and, he's not overpowering.
It's funny though.
Here, it's just like boring.
I find it interesting. You like how, like, you notice how some people say, it's curious you said this, which in fact, it's not actually curious. They have an opinion. They're about to share it. But it's curious that you should say that Chris Evans is so bad, JVL, because I happened to watch the IMDb interview with the actors from The Gray Man, and they were talking about Chris Evans's performance, and one of the other actors described it as one of the great villain performances of all time.
Hmm.
That's what the actors of this movie said?
Who said it?
Well, it must be true then.
You have to go
They've been in a lot of movies.
Was it Ryan Gosling?
They've been in a lot of movies.
No, I'm not sure. It was one of the CIA bad guys. It was the man and the woman were interviewed together, and they were talking about
those two. I'm sorry, the entire CIA is run by 28-year-olds. That's insane.
It reminds me of Fred Thompson. Remember when Fred Thompson came to the Standard and he was complaining about the new show that was supposed to be the Law and Order spinoff the 30-year-old district attorneys? Because, you know, that's how old the DAs are.
It's funny to say that. There is a sense in which the quality of acting, the quality of the thespians in this after the top line drops down to USA Network level.
Totally agree. And because I'm willing to give anybody, I don't have to know you to enjoy the show. There are people who I've never known before say, hey, and then I would find out that they've been in other things, but maybe for me, it's the first time I've ever seen them. So, you know, I'm going to give everybody a good, you know, a fair shot at this. And yet, during the delivery of some of these lines, the female CIA official, her performance,
Jessica Henwick from The Matrix Resurrections. That movie?
What is she doing in this movie?
Terrible.
It was cringy.
Terrible character.
It was cringy.
Terrible.
I'm watching. I was like, you know.
So here, I have a genuine question, a business question about Netflix. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sonny, but the two most successful things that Netflix has done ever are Stranger Things and Squid Game.
The Crown.
Yeah. No, I mean, in terms of hours watched, it's Stranger Things and Squid Game.
Oh.
How many top line stars are there total between those two franchises?
It depends on how big a star you consider Winona Ryder, I guess.
So roughly zero.
One-ish.
Why are you spending $100 million on the salaries for Gosling Red Notice with The Rock and Gal Gadot and Ryan?
See, this is what makes no sense about their entire movie strategy to me. Why would you spend $200 million on a thing that is 2 hours long when you can spend $50 million on four things that are 10 hours each? If your only goal is to capture eyeballs for certain amounts of time, why aren't you just pouring, you know? And now the problem is they make a shit ton of TV shows, and most of them don't pop off like that, right? Most of them are not a Squid Game. Most of them are not a Stranger Things or a Crown or a Bridgerton or what have you, right? Like those are the rare exceptions. But that said, I mean, it makes no sense to me why you are spending $200 million on a movie like this instead of spending $20 million on 10 TV shows. Or even, again, like $40 million on five TV shows. Yeah. Like, I just don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Doesn't this feel like we'll do this project because then maybe we'll be able to be in the Russo brothers business, right? I mean, favor trading. And it feels like the publishing industry circa 1995.
But were the Russo brothers
give her a $400,000 advance. And who cares if the first book is no good? You know, this will really get her on the hook for the second book.
We've seen this. We've seen that. But with the Russo brothers, do you think that they looked at this and said, yeah, this is really good? Or do you think they're like, would they concede?
They looked at this and said, let's go buy yachts.
Yeah, okay. Just, okay.
This
all
is,
right.
God only knows. I would never presume to know what a filmmaker actually thinks of their product. I don't understand what they get out of this aside from money, because the movie's not good and it doesn't look good. They produced Extraction, which, like, compared to this, Extraction is like the best movie I've ever seen.
Extraction might as well be Heat.
I thought Extraction was pretty mediocre. It had a couple of very good sequences, but it didn't have any embarrassingly bad sequences either. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Extraction, which at the time I was like, this is so mediocre. Like, I look back on that now, I'm like, actually, that was great. That was a great movie compared to some of the stuff we've gotten since then. And I like the whole blockbuster strategy for Netflix doesn't make any sense to me, because the Oscar strategy makes some sense, right? You give You give Martin Scorsese $150 million to make The Irishman. You give, you know, Cuarón $40 million to make Roma. You give Spike Lee $50 million to make the Five Bloods. Like, I understand that, because then if they win Oscars, you get prestige. People are like, I want to watch. It's not even for the customers. It's for the artists. It's for the people who work in Hollywood. They're like, I want to work with Hollywood because maybe I can, you know, win an award or something. But the blockbuster strategy, like, the whole point of blockbusters is to make money. And I just don't see anybody signing up for the network to watch this The Gray Man
stuff.
And let me tell you, this movie, like, I am shocked at how bad this movie looks. I watched it in a theater because I wanted to review it.
I didn't know. What do you mean and you watched it in a theater? The Gray Man?
It played on like 400 screens for a week before it came out on Netflix. And nobody has any idea about this because they didn't advertise it at all. They didn't. It just kind of sat there
and won't disclose how much money it made.
It was literally me and like 37 other people in the country who watched it on those 400 screens over that week. So anyway, I went and actually saw it in a theater, and it was like visually illegible. Like, I could not see what was happening on the screen.
So let me point out to something, not just the parachute jumping scene. One of the very first shots in the movie is in Bangkok at a hotel New Year's party.
Yes.
And there is a scene in which there's a party going on, and we are seeing, I think it's Ryan Gosling is there, and there are people behind him dancing. And I believe you can see six extras. And the six extras are all doing the, you know, you can tell that there's no music going on. They're just dance. And it feels... It just looks small, right? Mm-hmm. It looks like they did not even bother to fill the frame to make it look like you're in the middle of a large revenue. Mm-hmm. It just looks like what you would do on TV.
Wow.
And the whole thing just feels like burn notice. All the way down to like the characterization.
Yeah, what did you say? What did you say on text? It was like USA Today or TNT?
It was like a USA Network show. You know, like, we're going to do characters. What is characterization going to be? Oh, it'll be Ryan Gosling's character picking the flavor, picking Bubblicious instead of saying gum. Uh-huh. Like, he likes Bubblicious chewing gum. That's his character. How many times did they say Harvard? Instead of showing us that the characters are smart, they tell us four separate times that the characters went to Harvard.
You know, I was like, Yale seems to be the college that keeps coming up these days in the news.
But. They're trying to sell the idea that the bad guys are all incredibly intelligent, but none of them do anything intelligent the entire movie. Keep telling us that they all met at Harvard.
You know who I thought of with Chris Evans' character, actually? I thought of Otto, played by Kevin Kline in A Fish Called Wanda.
Yeah, I can see that a little bit.
Because remember Kevin Kline? He had the mustache. And also, he loves talking about Nietzsche, right? And what is the opening scene with Chris Evans talking about Schopenhauer? Oh, he's so smart. You know.
But of course,
Otto was not smart. And it's like, so when I see this, I'm like.
And then at the end, the final sequence is they walk into the maze from the Goblet of Fire.
Did you see? The goblet was actually there. They should have taken it.
They get into this. Again, it's just the incomprehensible direction and screenwriting of this show where. Chris Evans's character and Ryan Gosling's character get into this fight, and Ryan Gosling's character is beating the ever-loving shit out of him until Chris Evans remembers that he has a knife in his pocket. He's like, "Oh, I forgot! I have a knife."
They supposed to be like a fist fight. It was like Gary Busey, Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon 1, the first one. All right, let's go. Mano a mano.
Yes. Right? But terrible.
Okay.
But terrible.
So just in case our listeners are wondering about the quadrant score, it was not good. A plot I gave a B because it's pretty straightforward, but I still have questions, such as, maybe you guys can answer this, how did Ryan Gosling get out of the pit that he fills up with water?
Buoyancy.
And it exploded, right? They shot
up to the top.
So they shot.
He created a bomb, and put the, so the bomb floated up with him.
Okay.
And then the pressure created, right, because the bomb is on, by filling up that space with water.
Yep, water.
Is able to create overpressure, which blows the, the answer is none of it. No.
And he got out of it.
How did he create a bomb with his, because he's also MacGyver. He's Jason Bourne, but he's also MacGyver.
That was a MacGyver scene. Okay, duration is a B minus. Action and violence is an A minus. Some of the action was interesting, but I give it the minus because I'm pretty sure I saw CGI explosions and fire.
Oh, you sure did?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
You sure did.
And that is so disappointing. And sex nudity is an F because it's rated R and it stars Ana de Armas.
How?
Really disappointing.
What is it rated R for? Where, what is the R rating for?
Fingernails, violence, fingernails.
F-bombs, probably.
Is there an F-bomb? I don't know. That was kind of the only interesting choice in the entire thing is Chris Evans choosing to play the psychopathic villain as gay. That was a weird off-kilter choice.
Because it's like a Freddie Mercury mustache. Is that why it was?
Well, and the loafers without socks and the very tight jeans and tight t-shirts, and then the other CIA character talks about the bromance that he and her boss had at Harvard. So clearly these guys were public school chums, or whatever the Harvard version of that is, during their undergraduate
Were you at all
years.
Reminded of John Wick when they want to get all the assassins are going to come after them? You know,
that felt a little bit like, them. But the dumb version. It felt like Burn Notice. Like season 8 of Burn Notice, when everybody in that show was mailing it in.
Yeah, yeah. I would say for me, the highlight, and Kate was saying the same, the highlight was the on-location scenes. By the way, because it's there, I've spent a lot of time in that area, obviously, so I loved seeing Berlin, Prague, and of course Vienna. Although Prague has the longest scene. Vienna and Berlin are very brief, although, and lots of movies love to film in these areas. But and the shootout was great, and I think the train, and then it just gets out of control. And of course, they seem impervious to death because they're stabbed multiple.
Yeah, like nobody's even hurt.
They do a tumble, and from the train into the car and things like that.
Kong and Godzilla had more realistic injuries from their battles than this. I mean, at least King Kong, I don't know if you recall this, but he gets his shoulder dislocated.
Separates his shoulder,
and,
right?
And then before he can join the final fight against Mechagodzilla, he has to, Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon style, push his shoulder back in using the building. Right. At least he suffers some consequences.
Okay, and let me ask you guys about the ending of this movie. He escapes from the hospital where he's convalescing to rescue the girl. Spoiler alert. And what happens to the Harvard people? Was this just they were doing this because they expected there's going to be a sequel?
They'll handle that in The Gray Man 2.
Right. That was my sense.
No, I think the African American fellow was going to jail,
Yale?
Jessica Henwick going to jail.
Jail, not Yale. Okay,
going to jail.
He's going to go get his MFA now, and then he will wreak his revenge.
Jessica Henwick's going to be the new number two. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Wow.
I love that Netflix has announced a sequel to this in a whole Gray Man cinematic universe.
Stop it.
Are you kidding? You're kidding.
Oh, yeah. They already... No. It's
what?
Facts. These are facts. I mean, the other thing is the numbers came back on this, and this is only Netflix's fifth best opening weekend in terms of hours viewed. It's behind, like... Oh, God. Hold on. I got to find the IndieWire headline. You guys talk amongst yourselves for a second.
The fifth most minutes of the first 45 seconds... rounded up in the history of the original feature films, which are over 2 hours and 2 minutes.
Here's the headline on IndieWire. The Gray Man falls just short of The Kissing Booth 3 as Netflix's fifth best movie debut.
That is a dagger of a headline.
Wow.
88.55 million hours viewed over its first 3 days. Still did not quite beat... the Kissing Booth 3.
Does that count the autoplay previews? So when you open up your profile and it just starts playing something without
because you're in the middle of channel surfing or something, and then it just all of a sudden it's on.
Yeah, I think that probably counts those.
They counted that. Yeah. Wow.
Boo. Okay.
Yeah, that was very disappointing. I was hoping for more, considering it's the Russo brothers, and it's Chris Evans, Ryan Gosling, and Anna Dunn. Oh my gosh. It's going to be amazing.
Just disappointment all around.
Spy versus Spy.
I still didn't hate it, honestly. None of it is very good, but none of it, with the exception of that airplane sequence, is terrible, exactly. It just is kind of, it's so, just so relentlessly generic.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Okay. This is interesting because this is, you know, you think about the last movie that Ryan Gosling and Ana de Armas did together, and it was so much
Blade Runner 2049.
Okay. Any other thoughts? No. Okay. All right. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sunday Bunch at Victorina Madison. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
You know, so, JVL, I did go to the movie theater this weekend.
What was that?
I did go to the movie theater this weekend for
a
show.
Did you see The Gray Man?
We're going to go talk about in the bonus episode.
Oh my gosh.
Paws of Fury, The Legend of Hank, which I discovered shortly before going to see it. It was an animated children's remake of Blazing Saddles, a movie which featured the N-word 78 times, I think.
I'm sure it's fine.